time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course this evening the views of our very, very special guest. It was a surprise to me. I wasn't expecting to have her on, but I'm so very pleased that Joyce Riley is going to be with us. But before we get to Joyce, I just wanted to discuss something that I was reading this evening that really disturbed me deeply. And that's the story of Pat Tillman. Now, as you know, Pat Tillman was a football star who gave up a $3 million contract to fight for his country. And he went off, and he was in Afghanistan, and he was killed, and of course the government said he died fighting, courageously fighting, and they wanted a hero. They wanted a hero, and here was a dead hero, a man, a real patriot, a man who really believed in his country. But the family and his brother felt that there was something wrong with the story. Oh, no, nothing wrong with his story. This was investigated. He died fighting for his country. And then as the story gradually unfolds, and as we now learn, why Pat Tillman was shot in the forehead, three closely placed bullets, all of them together. The doctor who examined him and did the autopsy felt that this was foul play, wanted to investigate it, and was blocked from doing a criminal investigation of the murder of Pat Tillman. And then as the story goes on, why, of course, we find that this went all the way up through the ranks, and there's a three-star general who apparently has been called to testify before committee, and he just doesn't remember. 70 times this three-star general just couldn't remember anything, and yet of course, the emails and a lot of information has been gotten under the Freedom of Information Act, where the officers were congratulating one another for concealing the truth from the American people. In other words, they intentionally lied to the American people so we could have a hero. And the fact that somebody had murdered him, three shots fired from about 10 yards away was the statement, three shots from an M16 rifle carefully centered in his forehead. And the government lied. And they lied, and they lied, and only now do we find out he was murdered, and that the doctor who examined Pat Tillman's body wanted to investigate it. He suspected it was a murder, and he was blocked by the military authorities, certainly congratulated one another at how clever they were in covering it up. Well, they're going to talk about, well, maybe the three-star general will be demoted one rank now that he's retired, but how high does this story really go? I mean, where does it go to, and why was Pat Tillman murdered? Not shot in the back of the head, shot in the forehead, as he was jumping to his feet saying, I'm Tillman, I'm Pat Tillman, stop firing. Well, Joyce, how are you doing tonight?
Well, that story concerns me also. I'm very disturbed by the kind of credibility that we have with the Pentagon when there are men and women out there that are thinking about sending their sons and daughters to serve this country. And we have the stories like this that are just beyond what we would have ever imagined coming from the Department of Defense.
You remember Jessica Lynch, of course, the wonderful story they told about her was all a lie. Why don't they tell the truth? Or do we have people in government who who just can't tell the truth, who want so bad to have heroes that they'll lie about anything. If they'll lie about that, what else will they lie about?
And look, Dr. Stan, at the Attorney General of this country being caught in a lie by Mueller, from the FBI.
Right, of course, this had to do with having this unusual form of torture. I guess those wiretapping they were doing. We'll be right back here. What do you go ahead, Joyce?
Well, I've got a collection of things that I am most interested in right now with respect to some of the veterans' issues that you're probably not hearing a lot about. The veterans have now sued the Department of Defense, or the VA, if you will, because they're frustrated, of course, by the delays in the health care and the treatment that they're getting. So this lawsuit has been filed against Secretary of the VA, Jim Nicholson, denying them their disability pay and mental health treatment. And I want to, again, bring up this issue of mental health treatment, because this is being used as the ruse to cover up what's really taking place with respect to, as we know, depleted uranium and the neurological effects from the service in the Middle East. Now, the Department of Defense is saying that it is some type of mental disorder, but yet they're not treating them. They're simply putting them on drugs, SSRI drugs, antidepressant, psychotropic drugs, and then walking away and saying, you know, well, we've taken care of the problem. Well, they haven't. And to, of course, keep from being able to have to pay for PTSD, because post-traumatic stress disorder is a compensatable item, they have now started doing something even more dirty. Now, understanding that the problem is probably really neurological in origin, related to depleted uranium, and I can't say that for every troop, but for a lot of them. And so now the Department of Defense is even moving further away from that and saying, no, it's not PTSD. It's a personality disorder.
A pre-existing personality disorder, so we don't have to pay for it.
Bingo. So now they can say, it's not that, it's this, and this is not a compensatable item. So now these troops, one-third of them that are being diagnosed with mental health issues, are now being cast aside. They're being told, hey, it's something you've had for a long time, you know, you're out of here. Which now means, and as you recall during the first Gulf War, we had about 75% of the troops that came back that were ill went for treatment, and they were either placed on or offered Prozac or Zoloft. Now, that was in the first Gulf War. They're doing the same thing right now to hide what's really taking place. Well, there is a family now who has now filed another lawsuit and is saying that their son's suicide is a direct result of failure to give them care, to give him care. And so now this family of an Iraq veteran has gone forward suing Jim Nicholson for the negligent suicide, or the negligence in the suicide of the death of their son. Jeffrey Lucy is his name. He was 23 years old. He was he came back and he said he was sick, and they said, well, you've got a mental problem, and they kicked him out, basically.
Hold that thought right there, Joyce. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce Riley is our special guest this evening. We're talking really about the mistreatment, the planned, calculated mistreatment of our veterans. Now, you have to understand that taking care of all these veterans, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands, you know, of veterans, and before long it'll be millions of veterans of this unnecessary war. It just costs too much money. They don't have the money budgeted. They actually pay employees of the Veterans Administration bonuses for denying care. And the more care you deny, the higher the bonus you get. It gives you real incentive, and this is standard procedure. And, of course, as Joyce has pointed out, that many of the young men who are coming back, about a third of those that come back within 3 months, and we're talking about this war, are ill, and they're told, oh, we have post-traumatic stress, but about a third, of the people who are ill, who need care, why they say, oh, no, you had a pre-existing personality disorder, so we're not going to pay you anything at all. Now, if they have post-traumatic stress, that, of course, is a compensatable disorder. So they have a plan program there in the Veterans Administration, and these people who work for the Veterans Administration get bonuses for withholding care, and this is all coordinated by a man named Jim Nicholson, who is in charge of the Veterans Administration, who for years has been doing everything he could not to help the veterans, but to keep as many as possible from getting compensation because it saved money, and then he, of course, was rewarded for depriving the veterans of care. Well, now, Jim Nicholson has recently resigned from the Veterans Administration, but he and the VA are being sued by the family of a young man who was ill, had post-traumatic stress. They wouldn't treat him, and he committed suicide. So you pick this story up, Joyce.
Well, the VA has declined to comment on this lawsuit, but it seems that it may be related to his abruptly announcing his stepping down, because there are a lot of lawsuits that I believe are now being filed. Now, this is a troop who was 23 years old, returned from Iraq, and he began to have nightmares at night. He had daily bouts of vomiting, and he began to drink heavily. Now, this drinking heavily or using marijuana is the self-medication that they have to resort to, because the Department of Defense will not give them any pain medication. They give them SSRI drugs, but they have some real problems. They have real pain, and it's not being dealt with, and they're desperate to get some relief, to get some sleep, and they start self-medicating. And I've seen, you know, case after case where these troops have been diagnosed inappropriately it's been basically malpractice in the way they've been diagnosed. And then they start to self-medicate out of desperation, and they get arrested, and they serve time. And it's so sad because they get sicker and sicker in prison. But this young man told his parents that he had actually picked out a tree and a rope to kill himself with. Then we all know that when a person decides to commit suicide and they know the manner in which they're going to do it and they can identify that, that's pretty serious. So the parents took him to Northampton VA Medical Center. He was involuntarily committed for help, but he was released a few days after that because the VA personnel said they could not make an assessment of PTSD until he was alcohol-free. Well, I would hope that he was alcohol-free in the VA system, but they didn't make the diagnosis because they're not wanting to make PTSD diagnoses, and that's when he left the center and he was found dead hanging from a beam in their cellar in their home 2 weeks later. Now, this is what we're hearing from these families over and over and over again. That coupled with another thing that we're hearing, which is the committing of violence toward their families. There's something very bizarre taking place here, and I've been in touch with a number of attorneys lately that are representing these former military people who have been out for a period of time, and all of a sudden they have a memory lapse of several hours, and they kill the person they love the most. Now, we're not sure what's going on here, but we're looking at several possibilities. But these troops are actually killing the ones they love the most. An example is a young man who had come back from the war, was really the primary caretaker of his children. He loved them dearly, did everything that he could for them, and they were getting ready to go Christmas shopping. He said to them, you know, got them all excited, and they were all ready, and they were going to go do their Christmas shopping. But he said, let me stop by the office, or let me stop by where I work, and I need to do something there. So he stopped by. He worked at an auto parts dealership, and he brought them in there. And I really hate to repeat this story, but it's time that we hear it the way it is. And he went in there, told his children to line up against the wall, and he shot and killed them with an M16. Now, there's no sense to this because he did not have a problem with his children. He had a problem with him. And that is why I am so concerned that there are future murders that are still yet to have taken place or still yet that are could be stopped right now, and the Department of Defense will not work with this issue. They do not want to do anything to openly admit that it exists. I got a phone call from a man the other day who was a pastor, and he was begging me. He asked me if I would please consider looking at the case of one of the men that he had been ministering to. who was one of the nicest guys in the world, he said, and nobody can understand why he would go in, shoot his wife, and then start a fire in their home and burn up his two babies. And everybody is just shocked. They can't understand this. And it's time that we realize that the Department of Defense is killing these troops. They're killing their innocent family members. They have killed them with depleted uranium. You know, we're worried about things like Scooter Libby when we've got a million plus troops that are coming home and that are going to be injured for life.
You're speaking now because of the depleted uranium they're using, and they know how toxic it is, and they're covering that up.
Absolutely. They're kept covering up for the people of Iraq. And every once in a while, you'll see CNN gloating all over themselves because they're covering a story about a baby that they brought here to the United States that was deformed from Iraq, and they're going to treat this baby surgically and repair whatever deformity it has. Well, we created those deformities in the first place. And how dare we act as though we're some kind of hero after that has been depleted uranium poisoning of that whole entire area. And even more interesting with respect to this problem is, Dr. Stan, is that right now the Pentagon has just denied the millions of dollars worth of gear, including combat boots, helmets, vests, and aircraft parts, all the surplus gear that comes back after a war. They are denying that can go to surplus dealers. They are not allowing it. There's $1.8 billion worth of equipment that the Department of Defense has downgraded to scrap from January through June. At least $330 million of it came from the categories of gear that the Pentagon most frequently buys back from surplus dealers. But now they've said they're not allowing any of it to go out. Now you have to ask the question, all of a sudden, why they would put the halt on it. I personally believe that they are concerned about somebody getting a hold of it and perhaps being able to do some testing and find out just how much depleted uranium is in the in these surplus gear items. So I think that right now they're trying to cover their trail a little bit, because I think it won't be long before a lot of these troops begin to either harm themselves or someone else, and there's going to have to be an answer. But here's what they've been doing, though, is keeping the story alive of, wow, there are some real bad mental problems coming out of this war. They've been doing this on an ongoing basis and setting, because they knew what was going to happen, so they're setting the pace for people under, or the mind control for people to understand and think that, wow, these are just a bunch of really messed up people coming back from this war, like they did with Vietnam. And yes, they're messed up people, I'm sure. They're messed up because they've been having to do some pretty ugly things like kill innocent men, women, and children, and they're regretting it. So they have that hanging over their heads, as well as the neurological problems, the renal problems that they have, the kidney problems from the depleted uranium. And they're in a lot of pain. And so what do? They resort to whatever they can get. They end up driving with under the influence or starting a fight or whatever, and then they end up in prison. And I know that out of the first Gulf War veterans, we've got over 15,000 that are serving felony sentences right now. And out of that 675,000 that served in the first Gulf War, over 80,000 of them have now died. So, I mean, we have got an incredible mess that is a disaster beyond belief that's only going to be getting worse and worse as time goes on.
If I could just comment on that 80,000 troops of the 675,000 men we sent over there, we have the figures from the Veterans Administration, if anybody would like to see them. I mean, how could you conceal the fact that, you know, this, what are we really talking about? 80,600. We're talking about 10%, aren't we? How could they have died? They're all young, healthy men, and yet we have the figures from the Veterans Administration, and you can pull them down off the internet, or we can tell you how to pull them down off the internet. But you know, we pull that down, and we offer it to our listeners. How could you conceal that from the American people? Why, very seldom. Why, very easily. We have freedom of the press. And if you own the press, you have the freedom to suppress whatever you want to. But somebody is going to tell you what Joyce has told you. There are people at the highest echelons who are killing our own soldiers. And if you haven't yet seen the DVD that Joyce offers, it's called Beyond Treason, but it's got a CD-ROM with literally thousands of pages of government documents on the toxicity of depleted uranium. And, of course, the government says there's nothing to worry about. You can see what they know, and they don't want you to see. Go ahead, Joyce.
Well, I think that we're going to be seeing this mountain of murders start to come out even more so, because we...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, the interesting thing is that we did not have West Nile fever virus until the until 1996, the mid-1990s. We never had it in the United States. Never had it in the United States.
Until they brought it over and started doing some experiments with it.
That's correct. And in Senate Report 103-900, referred to as the Rigo Report, it shows the amount, the shipments of West Nile fever virus, or West Nile fever, that was sent to Iraq. Now, the U.S. government was complicit with the CDC and the Department of Commerce in providing this to Iraq. Now, when I debated the Assistant Secretary of the Department of Defense on the program, on a program in Pacifica in California one time, he said, now, you know you're a nurse, and you know that that is attenuated, or, no, excuse me, he said, you know that that is for research purposes. And I said, no, sir. I said, it was not attenuated or weakened, and it is capable of reproduction. And those two things, it should not have been, if they were going to use it for research purposes only. And I really, really gave it to him hard. He just could not respond, because I knew I had my facts together, and I knew that the U.S. government had provided it to Iraq. Now, the world really did not have that much of a problem with West Nile fever virus. Israel did have an outbreak after the Gulf War, and then the United States had an outbreak here, which was traced back to be the same DNA or the same type that Israel has had.
And if it was really, I did some research on this at one time, and of course at the time we first got our outbreaks of West Nile over here, the CIA put out the story that Saddam Hussein had sent it over here, that Saddam Hussein was responsible. Obviously a cover story. They could not let the American people know who really brought West Nile here.
That's right. And, you know, those documents are so incredibly important. The Senate Report 103-900, now, I'm big on documents. I know you are also. And I would rather have that than anything, because I want to be able to show people right in front of them where the damage was done, who did it, how it was done. And I feel the same way about the book Spider's Web. And I know I sent you a copy of Spider's Web. Did you ever read that book, by
no,
the way?
No, I know how to fact I didn't. In fact, I didn't know you were the one that said it.
Oh, it is a very, very impressive book. That book has been as high as $130 on Amazon, because it was taken off the market 2 weeks after it came out.
Well, tell me what's in the book, because I'll track it down.
Okay, Spider's Web was written by a guy named Friedman, who was the editor of the Financial Times of London. And what he did was he put together all the information of how George Bush had basically provided the money to Iraq, through several intermediaries, of course, to purchase all the weapons that they needed. It goes back to 1982, I believe. Well, it starts back in the early arms shipments to Iraq shortly after Rumsfeld went to meet with Saddam Hussein. But the book is so important because it shows where George Bush personally made sure that that $4.5 billion got to Iraq under the guise of using it for the purchase of agricultural assets. And then we have, of course, the Commercial Credit Commodity Corporation, who was also interceding in providing this money. They gave all the money to Iraq to purchase allegedly, foodstuffs or food for Iraq, when in reality they were buying the armaments and the viruses, bacteria, and whatever else.
No, they bought the both bacteriological and the chemical material that was used to build the chemical and biological warfare. And we verified this as well. Anybody wants to see the verification, we can send it to you in a simple article of the Washington Post. We sent them the material to build the chemical and biological warfare agents. We sent them the money to do it with, the technology, and then we were horrified that they had chemical and biological weapons. What insanity is this? Go ahead.
And also, this book has about one third of it is documents, government documents from to support what he talks about in here. And he also shows a conflict of interest waiver that was given to the cabinet of George Bush Sr. And in here is a conflict of interest letter in which George Bush signed stating that those people in this letter, the vice president, the secretary of state, secretary of defense, attorney general, etc., going on down the list, all had a waiver for conflict of interest.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joyce Riley. Go ahead. You were talking about this conflict of interest letter.
And it was given to everybody that owned any kind of stock in the munitions industries or in the to do with Raytheon or General Electric. Anybody that made war equipment gave them a carte blanche conflict of interest release so that anybody could hold their stock and still be involved in his cabinet and still be involved in the first Gulf War, which obviously, if you make a lot of money off of war, then what better thing to do than to help create the war? But the book, Spider's Web, and I did get a bunch of them. I was able to find a bunch of them because the interesting thing is 2 weeks after it came out, it was taken off the market. And I was at a bookstore, and I asked them what happened to Spider's Web. And they said the weirdest thing, 2 weeks afterwards, they came into our stores. This was a big dealer, big bookstore, and said that it wasn't selling and that they wanted all the books returned.
Yeah, that's what they did with Monica Jensen Stevens' book, you know, Kiss the Boys Goodbye. They,
mm-hmm.
they called them all back in. They all disappeared.
And this book is so interesting because it's all the facts. It's all about how, it's the subtitle is The Secret History of How the White House Illegally Armed Iraq. So what we did was we sent them the money to purchase all of these weapons. And according to Jane's Weekly, at the time of the first Iraq War, 6 months before the first Iraq War, I checked the figures of Jane's Defense Weekly, and we tripled our sales of weapons to people surrounding Iraq. In other words, countries surrounding Iraq. We began selling in a lot of munitions to them, basically letting them know there was going to be a problem later on. You might want to take care of yourself, and you might want to provide for yourself defensively. And so all of this was planned. This does not happen by some guy just all of a sudden deciding to go into Kuwait. This was planned. So, but when you think about it, the United States sent the money over there, or George Bush sent the money over there to purchase all these heinous weapons. The biologicals, and yes, anthrax was used in that war, and yes, Saddam did use it, and I believe the United States also used it, but we know Saddam did. And then we send our troops in there, and we don't even have them protected. They didn't even have gas masks that worked. They didn't have filters that worked. They didn't have mop suits or mission-oriented protective posture suits that would work. They were left just flapping in the breeze. We set them up knowing full well that they were going to bomb the nuclear plants, of which we had also provided the money to build a nuclear plant.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cindy Joyce is simply talking about the first Gulf War, where, of course, the United States had sent Saddam Hussein billions of dollars, had actually allowed him to purchase the chemical and biological warfare unit material that he would use in his chemical and biological weapons. And then they did not give our boys adequate protection. They went ahead, they blew up, of course, the bunkers at Kamachi and elsewhere. And these bunkers were full of poison gas. And at least 100,000, probably many more of our boys, were gassed with the poison gas that our military put in the atmosphere, knowing full well our boys would get it. Many of them now are having delayed, of course, neurological changes due to the sarin gas. They lied about it. They lied for years, saying there was no poison gas used. There was absolutely none. Well, maybe 5,000 troops were exposed. Maybe 10,000 troops were exposed. Maybe 50,000 troops were exposed. I I think the last figure was, what, 100,000 to 150,000? And now they're beginning to get the secondary neurological changes. Oh, shucks, just a mistake. We had no idea when we blew up those bunkers full of poison gas. The poison gas would go into the air and be useful to experiment on our own troops. How could such things like that happen? The American people are incapable of believing this could have happened, Joyce, but it really did, didn't it?
Absolutely it did, and we set it up so that our troops would be placed into harm's way, and then we created the situation afterward that they would not be taken care of. So this has all been by design. And when the troops finally figure out that they have been used, I mean, the anger, the frustration, but yet they are so sick at that point that they really can't do anything about it. And then they become dependent upon the VA, which there's a lot of wonderful people that work at the VA hospitals. But there's also the VA setup so that the problems stay within the VA so the world doesn't see what happened. And all of the experiments that have been done in the past can be monitored through the VA system, whether it's, you know, or could, whether it was with the Atomic Veterans, Agent Orange, whatever. We kind of keep our little dirty secrets within one institution. But the very fact that we would send our troops in there, and by the way, the MOP suits, or the Mission-Oriented Protective Posture suits, considered to be the, you know, the protective biochemical guard that they would wear, the chemical suits that they would wear, those were defective. A company called Isratex made 800,000 of those suits for the Department of Defense, and they were defective. They had holes through them. They were unable to be used. And after the war, there was a semi-investigation into the company Isratex, which was located at Raynell, West Virginia. And all of the guys left the country, and so there was never a charge brought against anybody, and it was one of those, oh, gee, oh, well, never mind. We just can't figure it out. So that, you know, the American public ought to be getting really tired of this. Gee, we're tired of this. I mean, the Department of Defense saying, gee, we are so stupid, because that's what's happening. I don't care whether it's all the laptops that are being left, you know, with all the names of the veterans on them or whatever. It's as if we have the most stupid, incompetent group of people working there, and we know that's not true. And just like you were talking about at the beginning of the program, this general who said he couldn't remember 70 times, you know that everything they say is put down on paper in one way or another. It's documented. And for these people to be saying, gee, we just can't figure it out.
3-star general, and he just 70 times he says, I just don't remember. Come on now. I mean, obviously it's a cover-up, but who's he covering up for? Who's above the 3-star general at the top of this whole effort to create a dead hero, a courageous man who gave up a $3 million football contract to fight for his country? And boy, we sure had a hero, didn't we? We all were rallying behind, you know, Pat Tillman, who went down fighting. And, of course, he was really killed by his own men. Somebody there shot him 3 times in the forehead, and they've covered it up until just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor, of course, wanted to investigate it as a criminal activity, and he wasn't allowed to. And that's in the paper. You can pull it up within the last 24 hours. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, we're dealing with organized evils at the highest levels of our government. Pat Tillman was far more useful as a dead hero than, of course, as a live fighting man.
And, you know, it's interesting now because in that report they're now saying who was angry with Pat Tillman or who had it out for Pat Tillman. I mean, they're obviously looking at it being an intentional killing because, you know, CNN did a, what do you call it when you... it's not a cartoon, but it's an animated kind of a description of what happened. And they went to all this trouble to show how this took place and how, oh my goodness, it was such an unfortunate event. And in reality, they have covered it up in 4 investigations now. 4. The military hasn't been able to get it right in 4. That's because they're lying. And we all know that a lie requires another lie to support it. That's where they are. So we just got some very bizarre things happening in the military right now, and I'm concerned because the war is getting out of hand. People don't want it. They realize the fraud of it. 9/11 is being exposed, and of course, I know Dave was going to be talking tonight about the ripple effect, and I hope that you will have him back again because...
I certainly will. Dave, of course, is Joyce's husband, and he's come out with a great DVD called The Ripple Effect, 911 Ripple Effect, and we'll be having him on. We do carry that, and we also carry Beyond Treason DVD that they put out. But if you're a veteran, why, since you get that for nothing through Joyce, want to get that that address out, the website out again, where people can get it, Joyce?
Yes, if you want to get a copy of Beyond Treason, go to beyondtreason.com, or you can call us at 877-GULF-VET, 877-GULF-VET, and we'll give it to any veteran. It doesn't have to be a Gulf War veteran. But we want to get these copies out there because it's making sense to a lot of people. They're able to kind of, once and for all, see what this is all about and see why it is that they have been lied to. And, you know, I thought it was interesting on the ripple effect, how many military people, former military people, were speaking out and how many airline pilots literally had come forward now and say, that's it, we're going to tell the truth. And these people are putting, you remember when you saw the DVD, there was one airline pilot there who had his actual flying, you know, his uniform on of the company that he flies for. I mean, he put himself and me into some jeopardy for having done that in his uniform. But they don't care. They want the truth out and they're willing to sacrifice. So I just commend them, for what they've done.
Well, it's a great DVD, and we certainly enjoyed it, and we're encouraging people to get it. 911 Ripple Effect. Well, anyway, I think, Joyce, what we have to do is get people to understand that our fighting men are in jeopardy, not from the enemy, not from the enemy in Iraq, not from the Al-Qaeda, not from the Sunnis. The greatest enemy is in the Pentagon, and this is the great tragedy. Certainly during the first Gulf War, we lost 100 men in combat, and 80,000 have died since they came home. How could that have happened? And nobody knows about it. Nobody talks about it. And if you want the documentation, why, we will actually send you the pages from the Gulf, from the Veterans Administration's own pages up on the Internet. 80,000 dead. And how many of those are ill? Well, of course, how many are ill today? What percentage of the men we sent over in the first Gulf War are ill today?
Oh, I think between those that have died and those that are ill, it's something like 70%, 70 or 80%.
And, of course, those are coming back now. A third are ill within 3 months. And all shucks, they just can't figure out what's going on.
And either they have, and I've said this many, many times, either they have the most incompetent medical people and research people, or it is a cover-up by design, and I think we know that.
But if you're in the military and you tell the truth, your career's over, and some of the people are coming forward, you know, and telling the truth, but of course you're never going to hear it because of the control of the media.
And the media control is huge, and just listening to people like Bill O'Reilly and the manner in which they beat down people who try to come forward and tell the truth, it is just, you know, you have to be really brave to go on these stations because they control the microphone, turn the volume down on your microphone so that you can't be heard, and then it just makes such a difficult situation. It's almost impossible to be able to have a discussion with them at all. It's almost not even worth it to go on the TV with them. But, you know, we're looking now, right now, at thousands, hundreds of thousands of troops that have spent 4, 5, 6, up to 8, they've been sent over there 8 times, as many as 8 times, to Iraq and to Afghanistan, and now they're coming back, and they are falling ill. The Department of Defense doesn't put them up in the VA hospitals because the same thing with the Gulf War, they don't want people to know how sick they are or how many they are, so they don't put them there in the hospitals. And plus, They've got so many of these troops that are so sick and legitimately need the bed for, you know, amputation injuries and that kind of thing, that they just don't have any room for them. So they're being moved out into the VA hospitals or out into the outpatient centers. They're not being treated. They're giving drugs, drugs, drugs. And I will tell you that in some of the cases in which I've been investigating, these troops are sent the SSRI drugs to their home in the mail. They don't even have to come in and get their prescriptions reauthorized. They just send them bags and bags of pills at home. And it gets really out of hand, and then they don't know what they're taking, how much they're taking. We know the side effects of a lot of these SSRI psychotropic drugs. And then you've got a situation now in a family that just bottoms out, and there's no way to help these families. They are desperate. They want help. They go to the VA. They say, look, something's wrong with my husband. Something's wrong. We don't know what it is. And there's no help coming from the VA. You talk about negligence and malpractice. I mean, it is treason in the manner in which these troops are being taken care of.
Ella, and the fact that some of the VA employees actually get bonuses for denying care, this is really what's so unconscionable. And, of course, James Nicholson has finally resigned, and I hope, of course, there will be a lot more suits against him personally for malfeasance. And you hate to have to go to lawyers to get things done, but Congress can appropriate all the money they want to and put through all the legislation they want to. But there's a bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., that is above Congress, is answerable to no one. Well, there's a force there, but certainly it's not answerable to Congress.
Oh, and by the way, I also got a copy of the military PTSD manual. It's about 120 pages, and if you want to read it, go to thepowerhour.com, thepowerhour.com, go to the news section, and if you scroll way down, you'll have to scroll down till you can find it because it's several days ago. I posted it up there, but there's 121 pages of the PTSD manual, and you'll be able to see what the Department of Defense is doing through the Veterans Administration. Now, another thing that is really of concern right now is the move toward removing weapons from any military person that has any type of been adjudicated for a mental disorder. The Veterans Benefit Agency, or the VBA, has now said that if there is anyone who's adjudicated to be 100% mental disorder, you cannot own any weapons, nor can anyone in your family own any weapons. So think how limiting that is. And understand that for the VA to adjudicate somebody, I mean, they can adjudicate me to be a monkey if they wanted to. They can adjudicate you to be anything. And if they say that you have 100% mental problem or personality disorder or whatever, then you cannot have a weapon. Now, there's some information on the Internet, and just go to Veterans Benefit Agency and put in, ownership of weapons, and I think you can Google it. But this is really serious, because if they're bringing these troops back, and because they don't want to diagnose them with depleted uranium, they instead give them a mental disorder of some kind, then that puts them in the category of not being able to own a weapon. And taking weapons away from the military people might be something they might want to do. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Stan?
Amen to that, because the one thing they fear is a military that suddenly realizes that it's been betrayed by its leaders. And, that, of course, there's so many problems for our military personnel when they get back. And there's, when they send them over, they're still giving them, they'll give them 6 or 8 vaccines all in one day. And, of course, we have to understand, you should never give a number of vaccines together. Because, of course, it immobilizes the immune system, it immobilizes the separate immune system in the brain, it produces swelling in the brain, and can produce some very serious injuries to the brain as a result of that, and sometimes those are never recovered from. They're still using this terrible anthrax vaccine that there were so many complications from before, and they're giving it again to everyone going into those theaters. So you know, the idea that they would give, you know, 6 or 8 vaccines the same day, unconscionable and not medically sound at all. They know that, and they're still doing it. Why?
Well, and I had 10 in one day, and I remember writing in my journal, I said, I had 10 vaccines today. I would take 100 just to serve my country. And I had no idea what I was getting involved with. I had no idea what my life was going to be like 6 months later. And it only took about 6 months before I ended up in the hospital and had this demyelinating disease that nobody had ever seen before. And it was so bizarre. I don't even talk about it a lot because I don't want anyone to ever think that I am giving people information that they can mimic it from, because it was the most bizarre thing. But it was partial paralysis. And to get anyone to believe in you, when you have something that's not in the textbooks, oh, let me tell you, that's someplace you just don't want to go.
In fact, I remember this one VA officer that I'd interviewed, and he was a neurologist, and he was getting MRIs where he could actually pick up these demyelinating diseases. He was ordered by the Veterans Administration not to continue doing those MRIs. Why? Because they didn't want to admit there was anything wrong. There was no Gulf War Veteran Syndrome. There was no illness. And, well, if there was no illness, then what were all these lesions doing on the MRI? And he was, I'm sure you remember him, I think it was what, named Bumsquag or something.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And he was actually fired from the VA. Why? Because he was trying to find out what was wrong with his patients and trying to help them. Well, Joyce, you've got 3 minutes to finish up the program here, so you go right ahead.
Well, I just want to say to anyone that wants more information, look at Beyond Treason before you decide to go into the military. I revel, I love it when I get these letters from people that say, "Dear Joyce, my wife and I just want to thank you because my son was in ROTC, he saw Beyond Treason, and he was able to get out of the military." And that makes me feel good. Not that I don't want people defending this country, but we're not defending this country right now. We're promoting the establishment of a global government and supporting an establishment of people making a whole lot of money at the behest of those people that are so innocent and want to do the right thing. So I really am thrilled when people say that he made the decision after seeing Beyond Treason, because I say if their son wants to join after they've seen Beyond Treason, then so be it. That's their choice. But please understand, there are going to be ramifications. I don't care if it's the vaccines, chemicals, biologicals, and I do understand from the troops that are returning that the United States is using chemicals in Iraq right now. And I'm very concerned about just to what extent they're using them. But there's going to be more blowback on our troops. There's going to be more deformities, more deaths, more homicides. I mean, this is a war that's going to go on for centuries because of the damage that depleted uranium is creating.
Now, when you speak of deformities, you're speaking, of course, of the congenital deformities, which have skyrocketed among the Iraqi children who are being born in the areas where the depleted uranium is being used.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it is skyrocketing. And I talked to Dr. Dodd Meraki. He is an incredible man who came back from Afghanistan, who's been over here teaching at the college level. And he said, "You don't know what it's like to be from Afghanistan and try and find a job in this country." And he said he went over and he photographed all the babies that were deformed in Iraq and brought the pictures back and tried to help the American people see that what they were doing in Iraq. And he said people are just not willing to listen. And I really have a lot of respect for that man. He wrote a book called Afghanistan After Democracy. And the book is a phenomenal book about the story of Afghanistan and what we have done to it. But he says there was no Al-Qaeda. He said we don't even know what Al-Qaeda was. He said there was Taliban left over, of course, but there was nothing like this Al-Qaeda. And he said it's totally a CIA creation in his mind.
I'm sure it is. Hey, we're out of time, Joyce. Hey, thank you so very much for coming on and rescuing me for this hour. And you can be sure that we'll get Dave on just as soon as we can. God bless. Thanks
God
for
bless.
Everything
thank you, Dr.
you
Stan.
Do.
Good
Bye-bye.
Night.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed Joyce Riley. And And certainly, if you have, know her website, you can just Google in Joyce Riley, go to her website. Great material, great source of information, great friend. Now, Sydney, if you'd like to get her video, it's called Beyond Treason, and it is excellent. And with that, of course, you can get the CD-ROM with thousands of pages of government documents, military documents, about the toxicity of depleted uranium. And you say, if it was true, why aren't we hearing about it? Why, for the very same reason, you're not hearing about the 41 to 43 million Chinese were starved to death between 1958 and 1953. For the same reason you're not hearing how we're poisoning our children with water fluoridation and lowering their intelligence, and all you need to do is watch Jay Leno on his jaywalking and realize we've got college kids who don't even know who's buried in Grant's tomb. They're destroying the minds of our children with fluoride, and with aluminum, and with aspartame, and with mercury, and with so many other things that they're doing to them. But, of course, people say that couldn't be true. Nothing could be that evil. Well, let me suggest you get Beyond Treason, and, of course, then Dave Van Cleiss's DVD, 911, Ripple Effect. We actually have his original DVD entitled In Plain Sight. In fact, we have a lot of DVDs and information. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, remember our telephone number. If you'd like more information on the things we talk about, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to know how we're destroying the minds of our children and the children in third world countries where we're giving free vaccines to those little black and brown children, why Dr. David Ayoub's the DVD, excellent, I recommend it, Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda. And the advantage to that is you get a CD-ROM with thousands of pages of documents on it. That's Mercury, Autism, and the Global Biodiversity and the Global Population Agenda. And you'll get a free CD-ROM with thousands of pages of documents of scientific material. They know what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. And they certainly don't want you to tell anybody else. And then, of course, we hope you want to get my DVD or a VHS called None Dare Call It Genocide. My talk on planned population reduction. There are too many people in the world. They intend to kill off the vast majority with epidemics and the coming wars. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we're just on the verge of a massive war in the Middle East. And then, of course, we want you to get my talk on population control. That's a VHS. And there's a four-tape set on population control. And you can go to my website at RadioLiberty.com and get my treatise there. It's a pamphlet on the planned, find me, the Population Control Agenda Monograph. The Population Control Agenda Monograph. It's free up there at my website at RadioLiberty.com, or we'll get you one if you get any of the other items we've talked about. Understand that we're involved in the spiritual battle. How do you understand the things we talk about? Why, very simply. There are people on the other side who worship a different God and who have no human compassion. That's why, of course, you need to get my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the book. You need to get my talk, Forbidden Secret, which comes with an essay. And then, of course, you need to get the information that we have on the Atlantis Connection. It's a DVD by Chris Pinto, or Constance Cumby's DVD, The Emergence, the Coming World Leader. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back here in just a moment with another fascinating program. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion, delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests, and hopefully we're going to have a special guest this next hour, and we're going to be talking about some strange things. You know, I've heard for many years that flowers respond to music. And if you play, classic music, you'll get one response to flowers. If you play terrible, beat music, rock music, hard metal music, why, of course, the flowers respond entirely different. With beautiful music and certainly, orchestra music, why, they'll bloom and flower with the hard rock music, they'll shrivel up, and this just doesn't make sense. How would the flower respond, or plants respond, to different types of music? And yet, apparently, there's some truth to that. We've heard this for many, many years, and people have done research on the effect of music, and the heartbeat music have talked about the response of flowers to this. Well, we have a rather unusual guest this evening. His name is Dr. Gerald Epling, and he is, of course, a scientist who's been studying flowers' responses. Now, flowers are living things, and certainly trees are living things. I got a little orchard I have of orange trees with orange lentil and citrus fruits, and it's fascinating to see them, those trees blooming, and certainly you get this wonderful fragrance that, of course, in the orange blossoms and the lemon blossoms, but there's a reason for that. The fragrance is there to attract the bees to pollinate it, and everything seems to be in such perfect order. I mean, everything in nature is in perfect order. Sometimes when man gets in there, maybe we can help it along, but in the final analysis, God knows what he's doing. Well, anyway, Gerald Epling, Gerald, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and about how you got interested in the flower's response.
Very well. I have a doctorate in cognition and neuroscience from the University of Texas at Dallas. I worked in the laboratory of synaptic plasticity. I was interested in memory, how memory forms and where memory is and where it is not. And sometimes the hardest part of a picture is figuring out what's missing. I determined several years ago that memory is not totally dependent on the human brain, so it has to be elsewhere. So I looked at things that might be repositories of memory, and I saw flowers, and they seemed to respond to me, but I couldn't put any science to that. I had a feeling, I had a sense, but there was nothing I could really work with, so I turned my training in neuroscience on the plants, and I hooked up a device that was comparable to an electroencephalograph, and I would think about the plants, and I would watch the plants respond to my thoughts. This was intriguing to me for a number of reasons. I didn't know why they were responding. I didn't know how they were responding. It's God's world. It's God's order. I came to learn.
All right, fine. So basically you felt that you were getting an electrical response. You were getting some sort of... But certainly, how much of an electrical response were you getting, and how were you able to measure it?
It was in the millivolt region, which was a surprise. I was expecting something in the microvolt region. I was able to measure it with a machine similar to a heart monitor.
Right.
And I could see the pollination response. That's a very strong response in zinnias in particular. Probably strong in other plants, but I've studied zinnias. The first time I saw it, I thought, wow, those are calcium ion channels in that plant. My training was in human physiology and this sort of thing, a little bit of man.
Hold that thought. Well, go right ahead, Gerald. And you were talking about the fact that you were able actually to measure some sort of an electrical charge, and you felt that this was probably coming through some sort of a calcium channel, which, of course, is a normal electronic channel that they can actually block, certainly in people with heart conditions for one or another. So why don't you explain to our listeners what the calcium channel is, and why we believe that the plants have a calcium channel mechanism similar to what we have in the humans.
Right. Well, I'll start with a calcium channel from inside the cell. The cell is a sort of a lipid bilayer, sort of some fats that encases a lot of activity. And to get inside and outside of the cell, there have to be some channels. There are channels for water to go in and out. There's a channel that will translate sodium and potassium in and out. There are special channels in all the neurons. But a very interesting channel is the calcium channel for me, because the calcium channel gives a very distinctive electronic response. It's great, it's tall, and when you start looking for responses, calcium is your friend. The calcium travels around inside the cell with the waters of hydration, and when it gets over to this edge where it gets ready to shoot through, it starts to go into the small narrow channel, and then a small magnetic field strips off the waters of hydration, the calcium ion shoots through, and you have a net positive charge. So calcium channels in people, I was familiar with that, but calcium channels in plants, this was news to me, simply because I hadn't studied plants. So the first thing I did was got online and looked for plant research articles that talked about calcium channels. I knew that if I had seen them in my zinnias, somebody had probably seen them before. And certainly they had. Plant physiologists had many reports about calcium channels, sodium channels, potassium channels, and responses of plants to light or to other environmental factors. And as I delve deeper, I wondered why they hadn't seen things like I had seen. Why had they not noticed that the plant responded to pollination? I had to go way back to the 1940s before I found anything remotely similar. And at that time, I found where a fellow had studied seeds, and he had found that when he first connected his electrodes to the seeds, he had an immediate voltage rise, and then he had a secondary level that occurred over time. And that was the only thing that was really close. Going from the 40s up to the 90s, I found articles where people had studied the DC levels of plants at 5-second intervals. So they weren't seeing what I saw, because they were looking at much longer time intervals. I was looking at about 44,100 samples per second.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a second. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Gerald was fascinated by the electronic response of plants. And, of course, in the past, why they were certainly monitored, these electronic responses have been monitored, but much more slowly. I mean, everything has been speeded up now with our new forms of electronic monitoring. Certainly we have computers, and we have computer chips that can monitor things that hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of functions a second. So pick this story up. So you're beginning to monitor the electrical response in plants at what sort of speeds?
44,100 samples per second.
All right.
So I had very good granularity. I got a good look at what was going on. The first thing I realized was the responses were much greater than I would have ever guessed or hoped for. Rather than being in the microvolt region, they were in the millivolt region. So this allowed me to use a different sort of approach with different equipment. I was designing and building my equipment as I was going on, because plants are so different from people that the physiology has to be taken into consideration when you attach a machine to it, or you won't really get the good picture of what's going on.
Well, you've attached this to the leaves, to the blossoms, to the trunk, or where do you attach it?
Well, actually all of the above, even petals, but I found I got results on the leaf of a plant that were totally adequate and covered every phenomena that I needed to look at. So I've stayed with the leaves.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. One day, I was looking at my zinnias with a machine attached to it, and I was just admiring how beautiful they were. It was a long day. I'd had a lot of work in the lab. My lab is out in the yard. And as I admired them, they started to respond. And I was really surprised. It became very apparent to me that this was a feedback loop. I was essentially having a conversation with my plants. Conversation is defined as communication with feedback. I had feedback. So I pursued that, and I made notes of which part of my body seemed stimulated or might be coming into play. Because some of the responses occurred before I was consciously aware of the situation, I suspect that my limbic system may be involved. You have maybe 0.3 seconds between limbic system activation and conscious awareness in many cases. So that's a likelihood. But I also had a feeling in my chest, like my heart. As you described your orange orchard, I'm sure you have a good feeling when you walk through the orchard and you look at the flowers and they're blooming. It must be a very good feeling, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You at that time most likely are drawing energy from the plants and probably putting your memories or your own feelings, senses, fingerprint into the trees and into the ground and into the area. Pursuing that, I found that my mind can affect a dracaena. If I have a dracaena, I'm thinking about it, and I'm out of the room, maybe 40 feet away. It may respond to me. A much more reliable response that I found that I can work with is to water one dracaena and see the millivolt response. It is fantastic. It's very repeatable. It's so repeatable that I presented this research to the Psychonomic Society in Houston, Texas, in November of 2006. And if people would like to refer to that, they can go to mindjava.com and download a copy of the article. As a scientist, I want to bring the things that I do to the public. I want to show people what I've done. And I want to have open books and lay all my cards on the table and say, here's what I see. That does a number of things, not the least of which they can apply their own interpretations. They can also replicate my research. Now, taking it a step further, I found that with a biological preparation such as a chicken egg, I could put a chicken egg on my desk, go into the kitchen to boil another chicken egg, and at the instant I mentally selected a chicken egg, the egg on my desk produced a distinctive pulse. I've repeated this experiment many times, and it's been accomplished in many other laboratories.
In other words, other people have found the same thing?
Yes, they have. The original finder of this phenomenon was Cleve Baxter. So I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't. Matter of fact, I did feel really silly the first time I wired up an EEG to a chicken egg. Again, I expected small signals, but I had to dial the gain down the millivolt region.
Now, why do you think you're getting a response from the chicken egg, or is it because of the living creature inside there, the little chicken?
You know, that is a fascinating question. I think I can relate it to the cellular level. The chicken eggs that I was using were
from... Are these fertilized or non-fertilized?
Unfertilized. They were from a grocery store, and they were unfertilized. So, it's a real phenomenon. It's an exciting thing that I think children of today should be exposed to either at the plant, probably at the plant level. Probably don't want to talk to them right away about boiling chicken eggs. We don't want to disturb their breakfast. But the responses of flowers to people are phenomenal. They're not well understood, and there's something that I think we should study and learn more about.
And so, of course, what would be the usefulness of having the knowledge that the flowers will respond to? People, to you. What about your music? Have you tried the music, the things we've talked about, you know, certainly with other people before, that soothing music gets one response from the plant, and of course the hard rock music, the dissonant music gets an entirely different response.
It does. I have no formal studies on that, but in reviewing the literature, I see Dorothy Retallick found the results you're speaking of. She found that classical music produced much better growth on plants than rock music. She's using acid rock. It may be that her influence on the plants was confounded with music. Music certainly has an effect. The noise, the vibration, this affects how much how the pores open, how receptive the plant is to water or minerals. But there's also that mental contribution. And it may be the case that there was a confound, there was a combination of her mindset being for classical music and against acid rock that helped accelerate the effect, or maybe that was the overriding effect. That needs to be explored.
All right, so when you get all done with this, what are you going to do with it?
Well, I think the usefulness of it has to do with finding plants that may have usefulness to people in medical preparations. The plants may respond to people who have a need. Perhaps you'll find a cancer patient, and you could monitor several plants, walk them in through the plants, and if he has a need, the plant may respond to the person. There is a significant amount of lore from people who have studied herbs that would support this sort of a hypothesis, so that would be a great one to investigate. The other thing is the activity level may be in a frequency range that has never been explored before. We may actually be able to find that activity level and determine the means of communication. Nobody knows how it is a plant can sense someone who may be several feet away and respond to them. And that is just amazing. I'd like to know more about that. And if we ever found out what that was, then that would open up a whole new method of communications. Somewhat akin to 1900s when Marconi came on board and worked with the waves and made just a very basic rudimentary form of communication.
You're talking now about radio.
Right. This may be today's version of radio. This may be science moving forward, making progress, and finding a new method of communication that is not radio, but it is as monumental and as big a breakthrough as radio was in its time.
Well, now, of course, do you do this commercially? How do you make a living? Certainly, this is not a sort of thing that you can market at the present time.
Well, I'm having some moderate success marketing some of my actual laboratory experiments. I've taken videotape of the experiments in progress and sort of gone through many, many hours and called through and found the best of the best. But it is laboratory experimental footage, and I've put that into a DVD that one can play on their computer. It has video files. It's a data DVD with video files, and they can see the zinnia responding. They can see a gardenia responding. The gardenia was amazing. Gardenias are difficult to grow in the Dallas area. They need more moisture than we really have. They don't like to get as cold as it gets in the winter, so they're essentially a houseplant. And I would go to pluck off the blooms after they'd gone through their cycle, and I wanted new blooms. I know if I take off the old blooms, I'll get new blooms. But I was not getting new blooms as often as I would like. There was something wrong with my process. So I hooked up the gardenia to a handy monitor that I had, and as I would approach one area, it would respond before I touched it. So I got down and looked really close, and I found a little tiny bud near the old played-out flower. And if I had gone forward, I would have ripped off the new bud. This was the gardenia responding to my intention to go forward and rip off, unknowingly, unbeknownst to me, the new bud. So that was kind of interesting, and I've got that on the DVD. I've got leafy vegetables responding to threats. The egg drop experiment shows how to connect to a zinnia. And some software that people can load on their computer to look at some of these data files that were made at 44,100 cycles per second. And that's available at bioexperience.com.
That's bioexperience.com. And, of course, anyway, if you have a question for our guest, Dr. Gerald Epling, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So, anyway, this is something quite different than we usually do, but I think it was fascinating, and I wanted to share it with you after talking to Dr. Epling earlier this week. So, again, if you have a question on this subject, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Can plants reflect our attitudes? Can they respond to people, who are there close to them? Can they respond to thought processes? There are lots of things we don't understand about what's going on in God's a wonderful, wonderful universe. Well, Gerald, why don't you go ahead and sort of develop these ideas a little bit more for us.
Following with the idea that memory is not in the brain entirely, the brain is necessary but not sufficient to forming normal human memory, I looked at the trees. I could sense something going on in the trees. So I followed this up with some electrophysiological study. I took a leaf off of a tree from my front yard, brought it inside to my desk, and hooked it up to this handy-dandy measurement device, and I could see the tree was putting out a nice sort of a relaxing rhythm down in what would be the alpha region, or many times below the alpha region of the human brain, 4 hertz to maybe 8 or 12 hertz. And it was just rhythmic. It would be a happy person if someone had this rhythm. And I had to think to myself, I've had many happy moments in my home with my wife and in my yard and in my garden. And to me, this is some of that time, some of those experiences being reflected in the tree.
No, because this is a supposition. There's nothing that you can put your finger on other than the supposition.
Well, I do have the electrophysiology, but my interpretation of the electrophysiology has to be called wild speculation.
Now, right now, of course, as far as this is a leaf off of a tree. Of course, now it's no longer associated with the tree. Is it completely separate?
Oh no, it is still associated with the tree. The tree that I'm speaking of actually was a tree that should never have been planted in my yard.
All right.
And it took a desire to uproot my foundation, so the tree had to go. So I monitored a leaf in the house while I went out and chopped the tree down.
I see.
And when I went out to chop the tree down, it became very agitated. After the tree was chopped down, it returned to a more rhythmic state, but it never seemed to be exactly the same, which you would expect with a big life change like chopping down the host of the tissue sample, the leaf being a tissue sample. So the leaf stays in connection with the tree, and that, again, I don't understand that, but I think that's absolutely worth looking at.
All right, well, we've got Heinrich calling from Connecticut. Heinrich, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Hello?
Hello, Heinrich, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Comment for your guest. Have you ever heard of there was a book called The Secret Life of Plants? Because this stuff that you're saying about the flowers, I know a lot of cultists and some witches and others who, know that this knowledge has been around for long before we, let's say, modern man has been researching it. There's certain things that if you're growing certain plants, if you, water them and take care of them, they grow better than ones that are, if you're really hostile toward the plant. The stuff you mentioned just now about the trees, you mentioned something about trees. You sound very faint on the phone when I'm listening to broadcast, through the phone, but I can sort of make out kind of what you're saying. It was known to the ancient Celts as well as the ancient Aryans up in, northern Europe and central Europe, as well as the Native Americans also, even over here, that there is a tree spirit inside a tree called a dryad or a triad, or it's spelled D-R-Y-A-D, I think. And it's like a certain intelligence. I'm not saying it's the same as plants, but it's a certain intelligence in the tree, and there's certain properties of certain trees. The cedar compared to the oak, compared to the cedar is one of the primary ones, and the oak compared to the birch.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've been talking to Dr. Gerald Epling about the plant's response, and a measurable electric response in the plant to these voltage meters he puts on them. And Heinrich has called from Connecticut saying that this sounds very, very much like this ancient knowledge that was known to witches and people who were into the occult about the spirit of the responses of various trees and flowers and things of that sort. Would that be, in essence, what you were saying, Heinrich?
Yeah, right. A lot of the ancient white Aryan civilizations that have predated Christianity, even predated all this Lucifer stuff that came out of Egypt with masonry, that's only about 6,000 years old. You're talking about people that have been 12,000, 15,000 or beyond years old. that even in the primitive state knew some of this stuff. And ever since they had the Catholic Church after the fall, of, even during the Roman Empire, because that was run by Masons too, more or less ancient Masons. Now I'm not talking about the modern ones. But even after the fall of the Roman Empire, they implemented the Catholic Church and burning people at the stake. And I think all that was a bunch of crap to try to keep the people ignorant from all the several forces of nature like earth, wind, and fire, and about certain plants, certain trees, like what he mentioned about the spirit inside the tree. Doesn't mean everybody should take this stuff fanatically religious, though, in the sense that you can't chop down any tree, and you know, like the extremist environmentalists are saying. I mean, a lot of those ancient pagan civilizations used trees, wood, and anything else from nature. They just put stuff back.
All right, but,
I want to know if he actually heard of that, you know, right, before the modern research.
All right, fine. Dr. Epling and Gerald, are you acquainted at all with the things that Heinrich is talking about? Because, of course, this is things that I've heard about in the past. What are your thoughts on Heinrich's comment?
Oh, I think they're very good comments. And yes, I'm very aware of The Secret Life of Plants by Thompson and Byrd.
Right.
There was a fellow in there, Eldenberg, with the Department of Navy, who replicated many of the studies by Cleve Baxter and other people, which showed the plants do respond to your thoughts. He also replicated studies that show that one plant responds to another plant. So whether you think of it as a spirit in a tree, or if you think of it as God's life throughout the world responding to the life in you, it still occurs. To me, I don't really think of it as a tree spirit. I think of it as God's life in a different form. And I know there's a lot I don't know. I freely admit that.
Well, I've seen some things like the honesty plant, that if you take certain trees, certain wood from certain trees, it draws certain things to you. And that's not all of them, but certain ones. There's no doubt about that.
No, Heinrich, are you coming from would you say, an agnostic position, from a cultic position, from a Christian position?
Well, I'm talking about from a older European pagan position.
Right,
I think some of the Christianity was created by these globalists way back then. I mean, they weren't called globalists then. They were called luminists or whatever with the Catholic Church, originally.
All right.
Which is different from the man.
All right. So this goes back to the old Celtic or Druid tradition.
Oh, yeah, even older than that. I mean, the ancient Aryan Norse in Sweden, Norway, northern Germany, they knew about this. Northern Russia, Finland also.
Okay.
As long as people have been alive, there have been trees and grass and things. So it's natural that many different cultures and societies would have exposure to this. But I would recommend Jesus Christ as a...
Yeah, but this stuff predates Jesus. Knowledge of stuff predates law.
Does it predate Jesus in body form or Jesus' spirit? You know,
a lot of the books were burned. I mean, by the Catholics.
Sure, you're absolutely right. Well, anyway, do you have another comment before we...
No, that's it. You can take another call. But it's an interesting show. I'll be listening. Okay,
all right,
thank you.
Thanks so much for calling. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a comment on this. And, of course, this certainly is the sort of thing that has been known, and I really think Heinrich is right, I'm not sure thousands of years, but I'm sure that many of the ancient religions and the Druids and the Celts were aware that there was many things we could not understand. And there is this, of course, this supernatural realm where I believe that God functions. And, of course, it's the most amazing thing as I look at my little orange trees and my lemon trees and my mandarin trees, and you know how suddenly we're getting these small little replicas of the fruit, and as they're growing, and some of them are getting up to a half, three quarters of an inch, or half an inch, I think is the largest one so far. How does it happen? I mean, if you stop and think about how God provides us with fruit and with vegetables and of course with wheat and corn and all the things we need, and now we have man interfering. Man is going to improve on all of this, and we'll look and see what a mess we're making of things. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Gerald Epling, who has been experimenting with plants, and he finds that he can get an electrical response from them when he waters the plant, when, of course, he's close to the plant, when, of course, he's thinking about the plant. And the plant seems to respond, just as we've been told that certainly plants will respond to music. So they seem to respond to vibrations. They seem to respond to, at least according to Gerald, according to his thoughts. Now, if you had bad thoughts, would they respond differently?
I do not know. I've actually not monitored them when I was in a less than happy or definitely not a negative mood.
Well, of course, certainly if you were thinking about cutting the plant down, would you anticipate you'd get a discordant response?
Now, that is an interesting question. I monitored the tree in my yard several days before I cut it down. I planned to cut it down at 9 a.m. on some random morning. So I would take a leaf and monitor it and see if I could get any sort of a response as I thought about cutting it down. I would think of, and it just didn't seem to affect the tree. The tree was absolutely happy, growing in the front yard, just doing fine. The only response I got from that tree was when I actually went out, took hatchet in hand, and thought, and with a strong intention, cut it down. And that is an interesting aspect of this phenomenon. If you do intend to do harm to a plant, the plant will probably not respond until you actually have a strong intention and you are going to follow through with it. So in that way, there's another opportunity here. If you could monitor a plant that could keep quiet or just put out little noises most of the time when things were happening, like being watered or being around someone it liked, but would put out a steady state alarm if someone were, say, thinking about flying an airline into the building where the plant was, then this could be an interesting sort of a device to detect what might be coming your way.
Well, there are many, many things that we do not understand now, and perhaps one day we will. But anyway, of course, where do you go with your next step as far as your research is concerned?
My next step is to make a nice little easy-to-assemble kit so that children can make a plant activity detector for their science fairs. I sent in, just yesterday I had another communication with the patent office. I'm patenting this particular design because I think it's very efficient and very useful. It monitors the baseline voltage of a plant. When a plant is threatened, the baseline voltage changes.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Gerald Epling. Before we go on, would you like to get your website out one more time?
Well, thank you for that opportunity, Dr. Stan. I certainly would. Yes, the main website is bioexperience.com. Go there, and then you can link from bioexperience to mindjava.com. MindJava has the scholarly research that supports what I'm doing. And you can link to arthurepling.com. Arthur Epling is a website where I put some of my experiments up, and I have a newsletter. If you'd like to have the newsletter that comes out every other month, sign up at arthurepling.com. All of that can be navigated to from bioexperience.com. And at bioexperience.com, in the catalog section, you can get my white paper and data DVD on how to have conversations with plants.
All right, fine. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I suppose there are two books by the same title, The Secret Life of Plants. The other one would be what was authored by Peter Tompkins. I wondered if your guest is aware of that one.
I'm aware of the Tompkins and Bird, but I'm not aware of one just by Tompkins.
I don't know about co-authorship of Bird. It has to be the same. Christopher Tompkins, though, right?
Yeah, sure. I think that's the same book.
Okay. Well, then you're familiar with the book. Many of the same experiments that you're talking about, and he found that a plant could get to know a person if there were an evil person, evil to the plant anyhow, that a person could do something like pluck a branch off of a plant and come back the next day, the person would come back the next day and the plant would recognize that person and would register displeasure at the person being in the planet's presence. It would show up on the EEG or whatever equipment was attached to it.
I replicated that in an informal way with someone who had damaged some grass in my front yard.
Mm.
I suspected who it might have been, but I wasn't sure, so I hooked up a plant monitor, and when that fellow would drive by, my grass would definitely respond.
Okay, Mike, go ahead.
It sounds like new dimensions in detective work.
It is.
Well, okay, I think that I read this book so long ago, 30-some years ago. I've been scraping my memory. He did many of the experiments with comparing rock music and classical music on planets, and I believe it did have... I accepted his results as being that the music itself had positive or negative effects on the planets, rather than, I think what you were saying a little while ago about the attitude of the person playing the music being projected on the planets.
Well, I say that they're tied together and that I can't tease those apart. In my opinion, I think the attitude of the person and the music both have an effect.
All right.
Well, that could be too, yeah.
All right. What are your thoughts?
He might have a point there. It's pretty difficult. It would take a lot of work to sort that one out.
Certainly would, but it would be an interesting line of research.
Right.
Mike, what would you like, what thought did you want to leave with our listeners?
The subject of conversation a few minutes ago had to do with God's imprint on all this.
Right. God, what is God's imprint, or is it coming from the other dimension?
Yeah, God set a course of life in all creatures and plants and insects, etc. And there is something literal that's there, and it's pretty hard to decide sometimes just exactly what that life energy is. And it's odd. It might seem odd to some, at least, that it shows up on sensitive electrical equipment like your guest has been using. It's something I don't know if we're going to really understand until we meet God face to face.
Amen to that. Well, I think sometimes between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference, and there are some things we may never understand because God is so far beyond our very comprehensive. Anything else you'd like to say, Mike?
Not for now, thanks.
Okay, well, thank you so very much. Mm-hmm. And, so, anyway, I'm going to let you go, Dr. Epling. Would you have a parting thought for our listeners this evening?
Yes. Think about what you do in your home, in your environment, in your garden, and in the people you meet, because the energy that you send out or the energy that you express in your body apparently has an effect on all of them. So, it'd be nice, and it could be better than if you're not. And I think that's a good way to look at things. If you're fortunate enough to be able to grow citrus fruit, you will love the orange blossoms. They don't do well in my climate, and I just really think that's great that you have a nice citrus grove there.
Well, I don't know how well they're going to do. Right now, they seem to be doing pretty well, but I will know when we get the flowers. Although I do have friends that juice grow both send me both lemons and oranges in our area, so I hope I can keep up with them. We've got Barbara calling, Barbara, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, it's a little different from what Dr. Epling is talking about, but I've heard so many times that in nature itself, that where you find a plant that is, say, poisonous to you, that, say, within 10 or 15 feet from that plant, you're going to find an antidote. It's almost as if God has provided, the end. Have you studied any of this at all?
I have, and I've heard that many times. It may not be as true now as it was at one time. It was sort of a rule of thumb thing, sort of like night following day. You could pretty much count on it. You used to be able to count on a square stem plant being an herb, and an edible herb at that, but there are some herbs now that have been introduced into North America that have a square stem, and you don't want to eat them. They are bad for you. So with a lot of changes that have gone on, that's not necessarily true anymore. So some of the Indian tribes would identify plants not by genus or species we do, but by their location. You know, this is a valley plant or a plant that grows near a stream or a mountain plant. And in that way, they have some very interesting sort of taxonomy and ways of dealing with plants. There are some people who would say that a plant would talk to them and tell them that they should take this plant and it would make them feel better. There are just many people who have had many experiences with plants. I'd sometimes say that the plants talk to me, but I don't mean in a literal way. They don't say, "Hey, Gerald, try this." I look at the electrophysiology, and I'm sensitive to what happens in my body and my mind. My years of study of the brain and work in the laboratory of synaptic plasticity have given me a sensitivity to which part of my brain may be engaged at a given time. And so I tend to take those factors into account and try to see what all these things add up to. And in a sort of a loose way, I might say they're talking to me, but they're not really... It's not in English, and it's kind of a different sort of talking. Like maybe an X-ray talks to a doctor. He says, "Oh, yeah, I see that broken bone. It's talking to me." That's what I mean.
You know, it's really fascinating. As you begin to contemplate plants and trees and roots and all of these living things, and, of course, God has put them all here for a purpose. And, of course, you know, if you go back into just the basic elements of pharmacology, belladonna, beautiful flower, you know, but, of course, that's the basis of atropine. And then, of course, we have our opioids, our heroin. Of course, they come from a plant, from the poppy seed.
Right.
And, of course, if we go down the line of so many of the things that are out there, penicillin, where it was a mold that God provided for people. And then our cephalosporins, that was something that they found growing in the sewer and were able to, and it actually seemed to suppress the everything else.
Cephalosporins come from mollusk in the Mediterranean?
Right.
Yeah. So I guess I didn't know the mollusks were near the sewer, though.
Well, there are all sorts of things out there that God has put here for a specific purpose. Now, some of the things we can use for other purposes. Some of them, these things we can eat. And yet, of course, if you don't get adequate amounts of fruits and vegetables, you're not going to be healthy.
Right.
Because each one of them plays an important part in our physiology. And now, of course, the government, in their wisdom, is telling us we should eat lots of fruits and vegetables. Well, that was known, you know, thousands of years ago.
That's
we're suddenly
right.
just getting around to finding out what's been known for thousands of years. And sometimes we get back to nature, where we're a lot better off. And what really frightens me is when we have corporations that want to change the genetic makeup of our plants and make genetically altered corn and safflower oil and canola and cotton and wants to put genes in there and then we begin to find out that these genes begin spreading into the general production. We find there's genetically altered rice. And, of course, as far as we know, it is not safe for human consumption. And yet it's spreading through the pollen all over, of course, the Central Valley. And I think man is creating some terrible, terrible problems as we begin interfering with the plant life that God created. And he said, if God created it, God's hand is in it. Barbara, do you have any other thoughts you'd like to express before we let you go?
Well, just Dr. Epling was talking about the effect that, you know, that we have on plants. But there's also, you know, the effect that plants have on us. You know, as there's an old saying, you know, you need to take time in your life to stop and smell the roses. What does the effect that the smell of a rose have on you? You know, the effect that the, you know, lavender has on you, the relaxing effect. You know, all of these things work together. I think it's an amazing phenomena of all of the different things that God has put on this earth, and they were never, none of them ever put here for naught.
Well, the quickest route to the brain, the neurological system that I know of, and just normal everyday events is through the nose. The olfactory bulbs lay right over the sinuses. You breathe something in, and it hits you right away. Roses are so... My cat has had a rough day. She's about 19. She has some rough days. I went and cut her a beautiful red rose that grows outside her window, brought it to her, and she had not purred all day until she smelled that rose. So it had a great effect on her. My wife loves the roses. I like them. Lavender may be uptake. Maybe the uptake goes back into the back of the brain. Well, we could. There are good things that lavender does. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, because lilac bushes, I just love the smell of lilac.
They bring back memories of my childhood.
And of course, the daffodils, when they're in bloom, why just it really is just so wonderful, and it just makes you feel good.
It does.
And so all of these things, of course, these are the basis, really, of so many of the perfumes that that women wear that are so popular, and yet so many of them have their basis in the flowers that God has produced.
Can't beat God.
You sure can. Barbara, anything else you'd like to say?
No, thank you. Thank you very much for having Dr. Epling on. It's been fascinating.
Well, this is a little bit different than so many of the doom and gloom things that we do talk about, but I just wanted our listeners to have an opportunity to hear his message. I just had a chance to talk to him a little bit, and I thought it was really fascinating to contemplate, you know, that all things work together. We may not understand them. We may not understand the electrical potentials of the leaves of plants and why they respond the way that they do. But I'm sure God has a purpose in this. And what we begin to see in everything God, and of course, there are many, many people who want to see the ancient gods of the Celts or the Druids. I would like to see the God of the Bible, because I believe he is the one true God of the universe, and he doesn't make mistakes. Anything else, Barbara? I guess we lost Barbara. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, we just got a couple of minutes more, Gerald. What thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners this evening?
Well, genetically engineered foods have effects that are not predicted. I've heard stories in the news about people that ate some genetically modified corn and developed a skin rash. Actually, I cited your interview with Josie McDonald in my paper, How to Have Conversations with Plants. That July 7th, 2006 interview with Josie McDonald was just a gem. People should go to Radio Liberty and get that interview. I'm sure you have that on tape, don't you,
yes,
Dr.?
Sure, we have everything on tape. And for our listeners who don't know, Josie is an older woman who lives over in Great Britain, and she has taken it upon herself to challenge a Monsanto and the entire left establishment as far as keeping genetically modified foods out of Europe. And she is, of course, well known both in Great Britain and in Europe for her crusade, and so far she's done an excellent job. In fact, she, last time I talked to her, she'd given a talk somewhere in Central Europe, and what was so fascinating, she said that a number of people had come from the United States who had actually heard of her on our previous interview. So I was gratified to hear that. Well, anyway, let's go ahead to talk to Will from Missouri. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well, Dr. Stan. Thank you. An idea that has come into my mind as this discussion has evolved here is that whether or not the doctor has ever considered running a companion or a series with Curlian photography at the same time, so that if there was anything to Curlian photography, it may verify his research and vice versa.
Wow, that is a great idea. I have thought about that, and I even went so far as to start gathering up some components to make a little Curlian photography device. I've got the camera and that sort of thing. I'm staying focused right now on the kit for children, the kit that would allow a child to build a plant activity detector for a science project. But I hear you. That is a great idea, and that is one avenue I would like to study. I haven't gone down that road yet.
All right. Anything else, Will?
Well, if there was, you know, highs and lows, it may be reflected in that. The other side of the coin, of course, would be to have a little hookup that you could put on the children so that when they're in the presence of the plants, we could just find out whether or not they're picking up that vibe themselves.
Well, that's true. The instrument that I make, The BioPulse device is a plant activity detector, but in order to become familiar with it, I do have instructions that I send out with it to show people how to learn to find their heart wave and analyze that to learn their skills of hooking this thing up to plants. They can practice on themselves. The heartbeat's a wonderful timer. It's always ticking. If it's not, you've got serious problems anyway. And once people learn how to use these electrodes and get their heartbeat, they've developed a familiarity with the equipment that allows them to move on to the plants. It is not a medical device, and I'm not sure how it would be perceived if someone actually hooked it up to someone around a plant and then hooked another one up to a plant. I'm saying perceived by the medical establishment. I'm not sure where that would go. It shouldn't be a problem. It's not a medical device. Any thoughts on that, Dr. Stan?
No, not really, other than the fact that what really is so amazing is that our whole physiology as human beings, our whole physiology, you know, is based upon electrical impulses. Our heart is controlled by electrical impulses. Our thoughts are controlled by electrical impulses. We are able to move our hands and feet, and all of these things are a result of electrical impulses. And certainly we have both a automatic nervous system and a voluntary nervous system. The automatic nervous system controls the tone in our blood vessels, controls our intestinal activity, controls so many things that we have no control over it at all. And that's automatically. Well, we are electronic beings, and I guess the plants are as well.
That's right.
Anything else, Will, before we let you go?
No, that would be great, and I really appreciate this broadcast. It's been very interesting to listen to.
Well, it's a little bit different than we usually do, isn't it?
It certainly is, but there's certainly nothing wrong with a little bit of difference from time to time.
Well, this is why I really wanted to, a little change in pace, because I think that, first of all, I believe it shows God's hand in everything that's going on, even in the plants. And
well, if we could just remember, I think that it's thy will be done, not my will be done, I think we'd be vastly in a better position spiritually.
Amen to that. Thanks very much, Will. Appreciate your call. Gerald, you've got about a minute and a half to wrap up this evening's program.
Well, Dr. Stan, thank you for having me back. The last time we spoke, it was in this time slot, but it was May 5th, 2003, and I'm just pleased to be back.
Well, but what did we talk about before?
Memory. It was an interesting interview for me because I hadn't done the research yet to show that memory was actually being put into different things in the environment. So I was painting the picture and saying what's missing and suggesting that what was missing was the element beyond the human brain that was associated with memory. So it was kind of a tough thing to put across, and you were my first radio interview in my entire life. And I think it showed, but you were so kind to me. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad we could have you on then. I'm glad to have you on again. And of course, this whole field begins to open up, and you learn more and more. I hope you'll be in touch with us, and we can have you on again.
Well, thank you. I certainly will. I'll send you more information as I glean it from life.
Good night. God bless.
Good night, Dr. Bye-bye. Stan.
Okay, fine. Well, I guess this evening has been Dr. Gerald Epling, E-P-L-I-N-Z, and website www.bioexperience.com. That's bioexperience.com, and we're constantly learning. We did an interview here about 2 weeks ago on dandelions. My wife went to the store today, and what do you think they have at the local store? Dandelion greens for sale. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners out across America, across the world, that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we really depend upon those of you who listen to us, believe as I do, we're involved in a spiritual battle, and can afford to help. I know that some people really can't afford to help, and this is why we provided on our website our programs. You can listen to our radio programs archived going back about 6 weeks free of charge. We have, of course, a number of excellent videos and DVDs that are up there, and you can watch them on there just by going to our website, and then the online DVDs, and they're free of charge. We give you our permission to copy our newsletters and distribute them if we give you our permission to copy our DVDs or videos, as long as you don't make a profit, please distribute them. We want people to begin to look beyond the obvious, to begin to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. And just briefly mention that they have collected most of the gas masks from the people in Israel. And, of course, they did this because they wanted to update them and repair the kits. Today, in Israel, almost no one has a gas mask or any of atropine or any of the other things they need in case of a biological, chemical, or nuclear attack. Why, at this point in history, with more danger for the Israeli people than there has ever been before since the nation was formed, are the people without gas masks? Why would the government have taken away the gas masks and not replaced them? And I think it's because there is a plan, and I shudder as I begin to contemplate what may lie ahead in the near future for the people of Israel. And I believe that for whatever reason, God has chosen the Jewish people for a specific purpose. I believe that the prince of this world wants to thwart God's plan and would like to eliminate those Jews, and I want you to pray for peace in the Holy Land and for peace in the Middle East. I don't know what's going to happen. That's utterly up to God. But our job is to be faithful, to realize that God is in control. We would hope that there would not be a war there, but the decision may have already been made. Hope and pray that there is not a war in the Middle East. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to get our material. My talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness and the book, my talk on the Forbidden Secret and the book and the syllabus that goes with that, the discussion on the secret mysteries of America's beginning, Riddles in Stone, the Atlantis connection with Chris Pinto, as he points out that America is the new Atlantis, according to the occultists and the neo-pagans. America is the new Atlantis that will lead the world to the new world order. And then, of course, Constance Cumby's wonderful DVD on the emergence, the plan for the world leader. And, of course, it is her contention, and I agree with her, that the new world leader is just waiting to come forward. We live in the most exciting times in the history of the world. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you have not yet gotten your emergency foods on hand, your barrels for water, your water purifying kit, that would be a big perky. All the things that you would need, the emergency food stores, the extra stores of vitamins and minerals that are available through our health catalog. If you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and why we'll be glad to send you the catalogs. If you you have the catalogs already, I give a serious consideration to making your preparations and where you get the material is irrelevant. The important thing is prepare yourself for the very difficult times that lie ahead. Understand, of course, we can make all the preparations ourselves and the final analysis. We're not going to survive without God's protection. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.